What is your favorite food? I think I can honestly say mine is bread. Now I'm craving my warm sourdough bread with some butter and salt on top. It's honestly the perfect thing to eat. But I'm also realistic, and I know for many of you out there, the carb feel might be real. It is too bad that carb-heavy foods are often the ones we love the most. That's why Hero Bread makes those same delicious favorites free of consequences or compromises. They have remade carby empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, plus protein and fiber. And let me tell you, their products taste amazing. The other day, Dennis and Leah and I were making some grilled cheese sandwiches, and that would be a perfect place to swap in Hero Bread. I am very mindful when it comes to what my daughter eats, and I love that this bread helps you get enough fiber and adds more protein to your diet while cutting down on the sugar. Hero Bread is not only delicious and flavorful, there's something for every craving, including sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas. So don't give up on being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use the code YOGAGIRL at checkout. That's YOGAGIRL at HERO.co. Sending money internationally just got easier. With some of my companies overseas, I need to be confident that there's an easy way for me to take care of business all the way from Aruba. So for these transactions, I trust TransferWise to take care of me every time. While there may be a ton of ways to get your money from A to B, those transfers might cost you more than they should. And it's the old way. But with TransferWise, you can trust that they will never ever mark up the exchange rate. They use really smart new technology, making them always able to give a great rate at a low fee. The founders of TransferWise, Tavit and Christo, did not set out to start a company. They were just normal people like you and me, frustrated by their bank's bad exchange rates and high fees from international transfers. So they wondered, what if there's a way to bypass the banks altogether? They built TransferWise, and that was a whole 7 years ago. Today, there are over 2 million people and counting using TransferWise. There's people sending money home, businesses that are paying their suppliers, freelancers getting paid. The more customers they have, the more their already low fees can drop even further. So put some money in your pocket for the more important things in life, because no one ever said it's important that my bank gets some extra money. Test it out for free right now at transferwise.com/podcast or download the app. Once again, that's transferwise.com/podcast. TransferWise, the wise way to send money. Hi, and welcome to another episode of From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. Back by popular demand today, I have a guest that has been on not once, not twice, but this is her third time on the podcast. Lara Hyman, anatomy genius, yoga teacher, physical therapist, mother of two, vegan, awesome, superhuman woman. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Do you like how I winged that intro?
I love that. We're all like cheering each other on. I wanted to be like, and second behind Dennis, right? Like,
you are second behind
Dennis. Yeah, watch out, Dennis.
Yeah. Just need a couple more and then you'll be up
there.
I know. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We're having a wonderful second teacher training together. And we were just talking about it's such an amazing group. It's so wonderful to kind of be in this experience with all these women and with you. And it's awesome. I'm so lucky.
Do you sometimes think that, you know, can't believe that we get to do this for a living? Like, we could be at a desk job somewhere right now.
All the time. I think that's why it's so exciting to wake up and do it every day. It's like I feel tremendous gratitude for being on this path and having, you know, having, I don't know if I stumbled on it or just had like some early wisdom to not be sitting. I kind of knew I didn't want to be bossed around.
You wanted to.
I wanted to be my own boss, yeah. and I didn't want to sit. I did know those two things very early. So
yeah, you did really good.
I know.
Someone actually wrote in. Maybe they didn't listen. I don't know how much we spent. I don't think we touched on that on the last podcast. I know we did on the first podcast. But there was a girl who's in school. She's going to be a physical therapist. She's super into yoga, and she was. She said she follows you on Instagram, and to you, you're like living the perfect life of her dreams. Mm-hmm. How are you able to so seamlessly merge physical therapy with yoga? Because there's not a lot of people that do that super successfully in a fun way,
right? I mean, I think actually there's quite a few. I do get a lot of emails or messages from people who would like to do it. And some of it is just the belief that the way I'm doing, I mean, some of it is just like dumb luck. I really can't say I crafted this. Everything to a degree has happened. I think not as deliberate, but it's been awesome. Some of it, you know, I worked in a clinic and I did all that kind of work. And then when I stopped working for other people and started working for myself, it was a natural blend. Like I kind of did keep them two separate things for a while. Like I taught yoga and then I would do PT. And then when I started seeing the crossover and how if I treated people that came into yoga, it's almost like prehab. Really what
prehab.
Oh, what I'm doing, I feel like, is prehab. And it's preventative. And I feel like this is where our modern medical model, say that three times fast.
Modern medical model
is failing us because we treat people when they're sick or injured. And if we actually treated them when they, like before that, like, hey, get a checkup with your physical therapist for like what's your posture like, what's your movement patterns like. I would love to, if I had more time, I'm always thinking of these type things. And so I would say it's a natural blending and you just have to find how you would put them together, whether it's in a yoga, whether it's in a PT clinic, adding some kind of yoga to it, or taking your PT knowledge and using it in a yoga class, because people are hungry for it. They really, really are.
Super hungry for it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nice that this new way of living, I don't know if it's new, but the idea that in today's world, we can kind of craft whatever sort of life that we want. Mm-hmm. These old social structures of you have to go to college for this amount of time, and then you have to get a job for that amount of time. You have to get married, get your house, da 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 da. We don't have to do anything.
No, no. And in fact, people will say, like, they really kind of like those boxes, like, well, do you work as a PT? And I'm like, yes, I do, but I'm not. And they're confused. Like, how do you work as a PT, but you're not in a clinic? And I'm like, I actually work as a more successfully as a physical therapist now than I did when I was in a clinic. So it's just, some of it is just taking, creating it and knowing that you can make something that doesn't necessarily fit in a little box.
But you're catching people early on.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
That's got to be really gratifying versus seeing people that have been super injured and then dealing with the aftermath.
Dealing with the aftermath and also being limited by insurance and, you know, kind of, unfortunately, PT can be very much like going to the doctor where it's like, okay, you have this wrong. Like something's going on with your liver. I'm just going to look at your liver, but maybe they're not looking at the other systems that could be contributing. And PT can be the same way. Like you have a knee problem, I'm going to treat your knee, but you know, if I have the time, I would look at way more than the knee. And physical therapists who really are into it do that, but that they don't get reimbursed for a lot of extra time for that. They're getting reimbursed for the knee. So it's, again, the whole insurance compensation doesn't promote a holistic approach. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember early on sort of getting the yoga people or the yoga person to, when you were working in the clinic, seeing effects of yoga postures repeated again and again in a maybe not super healthy way?
I mean, not too much because I left pretty early on and I was mostly doing neurological rehab. But I did do some orthopedic rehab and I did see a few people and it was usually back injury. It's usually the really bendy people and they would have a low back injury. Sometimes it was from practicing and sometimes it was even from getting adjusted not well.
Oh, you know? Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I had somebody who actually had hurt her shoulder because somebody had pulled on it, you know.
That happens more than people like to talk about in the yoga world.
Yes.
And I mean, I've heard like horror stories of that too, or sometimes you see photos of people, or if it's social media, or even I saw a yoga teacher training page where they had someone walking on someone else's back in a forward.
Yeah.
Bend. That's, I'm like, crazy. I would not.
That is crazy.
This picture alone is like, I don't think I would want to do this training.
No.
Like what's happening over there. But there's this sort of, let's talk about that. The glorification of the over bendiness.
Yes.
That's come from yoga. And it's also, it's very much celebrated right now through social media. And also through this, we're pushing this idea, or the social media world of yoga is pushing this idea that yoga is a pose. And the deeper you are in the pose, the more bendy you are, the more flexible you are, the better you are.
Yes,
at yoga, I
absolutely
guess. And how, yeah, let's talk about that because it's a
well
big
I mean
thing.
I think it's a great conversation, and honestly, having been in the yoga world for 20 some years, and it's it's more relevant now, and people in the sense that people are actually talking about it more and they're challenging that idea. But then you have on top of it the visual of Instagram and stuff where people are just trying to kind of mimic or emulate. And so that's where a really good teacher comes in, because a teacher, you know, there are these I guess some Instagram yogis that are have a lot of flexibility, and but they're not really talking about ways to get in and out of a pose, or should you be doing this yet? What are the steps you need to do? And so,
Or is it for everyone? Is it even for them?
Right. Like some people
should
don't,
should we be putting our butts on our heads?
No.
I definitely don't think so. Because I see so many of those questions. Like, I'm trying to get my feet to my head. I'm trying to get into this total, this place of super mobility, as if that is the goal.
Yes.
Right.
In fact, somebody in our training just was talking to me about Scorpion, because now she's rethinking it. Because she's like, where I was practicing, the teacher came and I was really close to getting it, and he grabbed my feet and started putting them toward my head. And I was like, well, I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily a great idea. I mean, some people are going to have had many years of experience of doing that in some way, like with gymnastics. And so their body has prepared them, one could argue, although I still think that, you know, some extreme ranges are just not good, period. But most people, there's no way they can do that without a lot of prep, and they shouldn't have that as the kind of end-all be-all, you know?
Right. So also, what is the purpose of me existing in this pose?
Yes. Yes.
Am I improving?
Right.
Like, what's happening here versus here?
Right. And I think the way we teach and the way we respond to the way other people teach is like, everything has a purpose. The getting in and out of a pose has a purpose. Like, I talk about folding forward, like, it's purposeful because it's teaching us how to better do that for our daily lives. But is there a purpose to putting your feet on your head? Maybe if you're in Cirque du Soleil? I don't know. I mean,
it can be empowering.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, there's those components.
And if you have like goals, and that's like, I'm here now, and, you know, like I see people do 2015, look where I was in 2000.
They're so popular.
Right? Those, that's really I still think that yoga it should feel good inside. Like, I don't need a photo proof that I've, you know, I want to feel different. But I don't know if I look better in my poses now than I did 3 years ago. And that's less important to me than how it feels.
Well, I mean, look better.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do I look more structured, more well-aligned.
Right.
More
that's actually what I'm always together. Looking at. Like, I sometimes look at some old handstand pictures from like 4 years ago, and I'm like, whoa, I was really sinking into that low back, you know?
When we first met, and I had the super upper back neck pain. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was, four years ago. And I remember you told me something like, yes, I mean, I know it's because of your downward facing dog. I saw you posted a photo of that yesterday. And I was like, what?
Yeah, what? She's calling me out on my show.
What? No, but I had no clue. I had absolutely no clue. And I came from the school of yoga that if you can place your forehead on the mat in downward facing dog, you're doing a super successful downward facing dog.
Oh my
God. How deeply can I press into my shoulders and press my chest toward my shins and toward my legs? And so that was really what I was pulling toward. No one had ever introduced even the idea of consolidating in the shape and what that does for me long term. So yeah, of course I was in a lot of pain, but I was able to look at it from that place of like, okay, wait, I'm in a lot of pain. Here's someone with experience. Huh? Okay, let's look at that versus getting triggered and that's not what
having an ego and being like, what is she talking about? Like,
but it is a really hard conversation to have, especially if you have teachers who are super experienced and have a lot of years teaching and practicing. And I mean, if you open the light on yoga, you know, there's the photos of Iyengar with his forehead on the on the floor. So how do you then? How do you balance that conversation?
Again, I think it's easier now. And I will say, you know, straight off the bat, being a physical therapist does give me a little bit of credibility right away with people. And I have had over the years really experienced, quote unquote, yogis who come. And I mean, I have one in my studio now, and I adore her. And she is Ashtanga, and she did Iyengar. And I shifted a couple things. What I'll tend to do is I come over real, like, gradually, like I've watched somebody move. So I watched her move and I just made a few adjustments. She was really doing the down dog thing, really sinking into her shoulders. And I get a sense of how she responds to that or how he or she would respond. And she's such a great example because after class, she's like, wow, I've been practicing for 20 years. I've never felt that. She was so excited to actually understand feel like she's embodying the pose, not just doing the pose. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people like yourself and like this woman that I'm thinking, many people have had that. They actually want those kind of like that feedback. And I think that this is where I'm convinced that yoga teachers really need more training in understanding basics of functional anatomy, like I teach in the training, that if they understand that, they're not going to cue somebody to push your chest to your thighs. Like I went to a class about a month ago and I really was trying to be open-minded and I couldn't believe this guy who was sweet, really nice and kind. But he was saying that. And I'm like, that was what somebody told him. And he hasn't thought about like, is that actually a good idea?
Because we're repeating what we've been told rather than investigating.
Yes. And yeah.
So for someone who's listening who doesn't, who's new to this concept, actually I posted on Instagram yesterday, I think. It was an in-the-moment snapshot of us talking, all of us at the studio. And you were kind of doing a really quick in-the-moment demonstration of just like ribs flaring versus drawn in. And then I caused so much confusion immediately on Instagram because the first photo that was with the ribs flaring,
right,
your knees were bent.
Yeah.
And people were like, am I not allowed to bend my knees in down dog? You told me to bend my knees.
Yes, 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 yes.
No, bend your knees. And the second photo, you had the ribs drawn in, but the legs were straighter.
Right.
So I caused mass confusion and I humbly apologize for that.
I humbly apologize.
Oh my God, I'm like, this was an in the moment thing, but
yeah.
I'm going to share something a little bit clearer on Instagram as well for the people that are only present there. But there's a lot of people listening. So for someone who is new to that idea, what does it mean?
Right.
To not allow the ribs to spill.
Oh yeah, because a lot of people still are like, I don't know what ribs popping means. So if you just imagine that you have two vertical lines, your front line and your back line of your body, and then obviously of your spine. But on either side, you're trying to balance out those. So when people will lift their arms up overhead or have their arms, hands down on the floor like in a down dog, if they push the ribs out and that actually changes those two vertical lines so the front line gets more like pushed out, like it's bowing essentially, then something has to move in response to that, and it's usually in the shoulder joint. So if you're weight-bearing through your hands and you come into a down dog and you collapse your ribs or push them out, then you're going to collapse in the shoulders as a response. It has to. It's following that front line. That front line's collapsing, and so the shoulders have to follow it. Versus if you hold the ribs lifted so they're not collapsing, then the shoulders have more integrity. And it's all kind of like, these are just different lines of energy, and you just want to feel like everything's, it's like a tent, like you're drawing it all up into that peak and that nothing is collapsed. Like you don't have like one droopy side, everything's pulled up. And
what's the first injury you see with someone who's consistently, because there's still people that mm-hmm. consistently practice this way for years and years and years. Not everyone is going to have an injury show up.
And it won't necessarily, it isn't always like an injury as much as it's lack of integration. So that person is, you know, not going to really advance necessarily a lot in their practice because they haven't practiced keeping all that strength in their shoulders. They're every time you push your chest to your thigh and you overly, you know, collapse in the shoulders, you're losing a ton of energy there and therefore strength. So that person's not going to really get a lot stronger and they could actually hurt the shoulder joint. Now I have seen people who the ball of the humeral head is really pushed through the capsule and it looks pretty gross actually.
Oh,
and you know, they don't necessarily have pain, but they're the awareness. So you're also,
is that when you see like a little golf ball?
Yeah, a little golf ball. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so anytime you stretch a structure, whether it's like overstretch a structure, I should say you're overstretching also these receptors that are in there. Like, so Dennis just sprained his ankle, right? He overstretched the soft tissue. Well, he also overstretched and damaged the receptors. So those receptors tell us where the joint is in space. So actually people that sprain their ankle are more likely to do it again.
He does it once every 2 months.
Right. Yeah. So he has to strengthen all the muscles, but he also has to strengthen the receptors. So all that, like, standing on one leg and really getting the brain understanding where he is in space. So it's the same in all the joints. So when you overstretch it, those people, like, I took a picture of them, and they're like, holy shit, I look like that. They don't even realize it because the all the brain feedback is also, it's affected as well. So mm-hmm. it's just, you're just sagging. Why would you want to sag?
Why would you want to sag?
Why would you want to sag, right? It's like we want to lift our energy. And so that's what I think we have to stop looking at pictures and trying to emulate these, like, really, like, Iyengar's pictures are just, they're...
Now, to me, they're painful to watch.
They're painful to look at, yeah.
But when I found yoga, I mean, that was mm-hmm. like... The Yoga Bible yeah. was the first book I read, and we have it on the reading list for the YTT because yeah. it is a book I think people should have yes. knowledge of. I mean, yes, it's history, it's totally. Philosophy, it's where we come from,
right? And it's good to like with everything to just evaluate and see, like, is this really, you know, is there something in here that I could change a little bit and feel better about or not? And there are definitely with Down Dog, I think there are, and mm-hmm. Down Dog should to me should not be a resting pose.
Right,
it should really feel like it's. It's just an inversion. So there, you don't want to rest in an inversion. It's a prep for other things too.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl.
I have recently discovered the beauty that comes with starting and ending the day feeling my very, very best. So every morning I wake up way before the sunrise just so I can be with myself and practice yoga. It has made all the difference. And rising early in the morning isn't as hard as I thought it would be. I actually always wake up feeling really refreshed and energized. And part of that is thanks to my cozy bedding from Parachute. Parachute makes modern bedding and bath essentials for a more comfortable home. They only use the finest materials, 100% long staple Egyptian cotton for their sateen, pure European flax for their linen, and 100% Turkish cotton for their towels. With smart, simple, and unique details, any room will feel crisp and clean. Designed in Venice Beach and responsibly manufactured by expert craftspeople around the globe, Parachute products surpass the highest criterion of testing for harmful chemicals and synthetics. Not only that, somehow Parachute's products get softer and softer every time they are washed. I sleep even better knowing that my purchase is helping a variety of incredible causes. Returned items are donated to Habitat for Humanity, and Parachute is committed to helping animals too. Sometimes I sleep with 3 pups on my bed, but for every dog bed purchased, they donate a percentage of sales to foster-based shelters located in Los Angeles. I dream of a world where everyone starts their day becoming fully awake. So spend your mornings taking some time for self-care and start off with Parachute. Inner peace begins at home the moment you wake up in the morning. Visit ParachuteHome.com/YogaGirl for free shipping and returns on Parachute's very comfortable bedding and bath linens. They offer a 60-day trial, so if you don't love it, just send it right back. That's ParachuteHome.com/YogaGirl for free shipping and returns on all Parachute's bedding and bath linens.
Did you know that women were excluded from clinical research policy by federal law until 1993? Women belong in scientific research. They are essential. But not only that, how can we trust any of the data when it comes to our bodies if nothing used to exist? Ritual took this gap and conducted a university-led human clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy. The results? It increased vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. That's some data we can trust. Ritual is a clinically backed multivitamin for women 18 plus with high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It is USP verified, meaning you can trust what you're putting in your body and know that it actually works. And only about 1% of supplement brands on the market have the USP verified mark. Not only does Ritual take your health seriously, they are also invested in the health of the planet. Ritual is a female-founded B Corp. They use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. I have been through the ringer when it comes to vitamins, and that's why I love Ritual, because I can actually trust that it does what it's supposed to do, and it comes from a company that actually cares. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/yogagirl. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/yogagirl for 25% off.
So what is another very common thing that you see within yoga? Say you had like a magic wand and you could wave it around and change something major in a major way in the way teachers teach beginners that come to the practice. Down dog, I'm sure is one.
I think down dog, I think the ones where people tend to have like more, I guess anytime you're needing to organize your body in a way where you're holding it in space. So plank and lowering from plank. Like there's just a lot of variations on that that get that kind of spillage where people like dive their shoulders down to the floor and the teacher could say, hey, lower your knees and then unload your pelvis. So I think that anytime you're moving in ways that you're not used to moving, you need to give people modifications and really tell them about how to draw into their strength as opposed to just kind of randomly moving. You know, you can see people, I've gone to classes in the past where there's very little instruction in the transitions. And, you know, so whether it's going down to the floor or lifting up or stepping forward, and that's where people can get really sloppy. And to me, I'm like, these are opportunities where we actually connect to our core. Even as simple as stepping forward, not always picking up your hand, but actually stepping and pushing into the floor and creating more space for that. And I think also just languaging, not going for big extreme ranges like backbending, whether it's backbending in a standing position or in sweeping down from there. Most people, their spine is not ready for that kind of those extreme ranges. So I think we have to do a better job taking kind of normal person, and especially in a beginner class, and think, I want to introduce smaller movement patterns and maybe holding those a little bit longer so the person has an idea of how to get in and out of it and stay connected to their core.
I took a class the other day when we were in, or the other day we were in Europe in spring, and it was such a flowy class. Like I've taken so many types of classes, and you can have a dynamic class and a class that makes you sweat a lot. But the type of flow that this teacher was teaching in the class, there was not one breath where we were not completely in movement all the time.
Yeah.
And then I realized we're not even in a single pose. There was no instruction for any pose because everything was a breath in transition the whole time. So a class like that, I left feeling like I wouldn't even call this yoga because I didn't feel like I practiced. I just felt like I was sort of doing some sort of aerobics, you know, but there was no instruction of any kind of like how to place your hands or what to do with your body in these places. It was just inhale, lift something, exhale, put something there.
Yeah.
And then continue that the whole time.
Yeah.
So there's also that, you know, people want to sweat and they want to have a workout. And I think sometimes, especially new teachers, can get stuck in the idea of, oh, I have to move so fast, then I have to continuously flow, flow, vinyasa here, do this here, throw in a chaturanga, make it flowy all the time. But the class you taught this morning, we had a sweatiest class of this training. It was so sweaty. It was like wringing out my shirt afterwards.
Super sweaty. Yeah.
Yes. And there's so many ways to consolidate and hold poses and become really aware of how your body is just existing in that pose.
Right.
And make it really hard.
really hard. And I think that it's the speed, again, it's either coming from lack of experience and almost being nervous. So it's easier to just like have people just move and not have to, again, language what's happening in and out of the poses. And I think less is more. Like I'm not very flowery with my speech. I'm just very direct. And I think that lands better for most people. Like you can give them an experience and then let them feel, but they're not going to feel anything if all you're doing is moving. But movement with intention is yoga, you know, to me. So we were talking about like, what's yoga, what's not. It's like, okay, 20 jumping jacks, if that felt really great for you and you're really in it, could be yoga to me, because it's like, okay, that feels great. I mean, but really taking people through a crafted class that feels super delicious on the body, but also really connected to your breath and your core. That's the experience of yoga that I would like to convey. you know.
And I love that.
Yeah.
And it's making me, I mean, this is our second time around of you leading anatomy and us doing, and it's different this time. Mm-hmm. That's for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
For sure. For different in many ways. But for me, just the idea of I feel like every time I work with you, I have some sort of epiphany about the way I think I have to teach.
Mm-hmm.
So how it's been sort of drilled into me by teachers and trainings of like, yoga is this and it's this only, or it has to be this. The structure of a class has to work in this way, and these are the poses that we do. And just now, right before we left the group, we were, you mentioned poses that you just, they don't feel good, so I don't teach them anymore. Like, I'm questioning triangle. And right. I had like a light bulb. I'm like, I despise. Triangle is my least favorite pose because I have never, not once, felt great in that pose. And I find that I have to modify when I teach it so much and offer so much, so many props and spend time, like a copious amount of time preparing people to be in that pose. And then it just hit me like, should I just not teach it? What?
I know.
Can I just cut?
Right.
Trikonasana out of my
teaching?
That is a possibility,
right.
But it's just...
It's so interesting, right?
My brain doesn't function in that way because it's such a foundational pose and it must be taught. But, and I love just introducing the idea of teach what makes sense to you,
yes.
not necessarily what everybody tells you you have to teach.
Yeah.
And I think this totally. Training is so much about that. And everybody wants it to be black and white.
Yes.
Tell me this is good or bad. Tell me this is a yes or a no. Tell me to never teach this ever. We're not telling them to not teach triangle or headstands, even though...
Yeah.
Necessarily, we don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I think. I mean, that's, I was like, okay, I might as well say this because it's true. Because I want them to know that, hey, I did used to teach it. And then I kept on, like, it's inquiry. It's just like life. Like we were talking about, this is, if you pay attention to how you move and what feels good or what doesn't feel good, I think it does make you so much more aware of what feels good and what doesn't feel good in your life. Mm. You know, when you have those moments of like, wow, I didn't really like the way I reacted in that situation. Well, if you're not more tuned in, we miss those.
We miss
that. And so like with triangle, it was like, I'm like, I don't know. I'm not really sure how I feel about this. It never felt like with you, it just didn't feel really good.
Hmm.
Like it just felt like, but it was foundational. I used to be like, this should be in every single class. And then I kind of stopped doing it in my own practice. And I'm like, I don't miss that at all. Because if we're supposed to be doing this, like getting a lateral stretch, well, I'm getting a much better lateral stretch in this pose. And if we're supposed to be getting a hamstring stretch, well, I get a much better stretch when I'm forward facing and getting, you know, it just, I started picking it apart and be like, well,
why?
Okay, yeah. I'm just taking it
just
out.
I'm just taking it out.
And nobody, but I feel no like one ever so says, like, why aren't you doing triangle?
It didn't even occur to me. And it was like on our last day of the first week, I was like, we're getting there.
Yeah.
Like, I have to throw it in.
I know.
And we have a session on it, and it's just it doesn't make any sense to me. And I had one of those like early on in my own practice where I was suffering from so much lower back pain, not from yoga helped me heal that, and triangle pose was the first pose I ever encountered ever that made me feel worse.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this sort of we were in triangle, and I didn't have any props, not a lot of instruction, and then I was okay, and then lift back up and find warrior two, and in the lift, because I was already with a swayed lower back, I'm sure. And it was a stab, and I just collapsed on my mat. And I remember, like, I came home, and I was immobile for like a week. And after that, it was also my first big click of like, okay, wait, I have to change something in this. Not everybody else seem like they have to do it, because no one else is collapsing on the floor in pain when they pick up from triangle, but I have to shift something. So what am I shifting? Okay, wait, I have to pull my belly in. I have to activate something here. Like, I started experimenting with that. And then I found my way.
Right.
But it took a while, and I used to lower both hands and then press up with my hands and then come back to Warrior Two because I didn't have the strength to just pick up.
Yeah.
And then I changed it. But then I started teaching, and it never occurred to me, well, maybe should I use my own experience and maybe not teach this pose in that way? But that's how it was taught to me, so that's what remained.
Exactly. Exactly. I think you just... We think that it's a tradition.
Yes.
And so there's this whole... all these different dialogues about like something's a well, guess what? Some traditions need to be buried, right? I just like to hide behind and say something is, I have these cute little two French Canadian girls who did my training and they have a studio up in Canada, and they came and did one of my modules, and they said, they were telling me the story. They went to some class and they said, the woman, they asked the woman like some questions about some of the stuff she was doing. She goes, well, it's tradition. And they looked at each other and they're like, well, okay. And they were like, why wouldn't you? That's not an answer. Like, that's just like, duh, that's not a good enough reason to do something. Mm. I think you can be very respectful of lineage and all of that. At the same time, figure out if it works or not now. You know, I think that to do something just because we've put it in some like.
I mean, all of it is tradition. Just we're teaching something with thousands and thousands of years of tradition.
I'd like to start a new tradition
to honor that.
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
and I always come back to yoga is raising consciousness. That is at its simplest form. That's what the purpose is. And so raising consciousness is becoming more aware of how we move our bodies and what feels good and what doesn't. And it's about making ourselves stronger in all the ways that can, so that we can actually raise consciousness, do more good in the world. Hmm. So and triangle doesn't necessarily have to be part of that. Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily have to.
Doesn't have to.
Yes. But it's about, so the way we were talking about this with the group just now, it's decide on your own.
Yes.
And that to me is a really important piece. And I've had people ask, you know, why aren't we like trademarking a sequence and calling it, here's what you learn when you do the Island Yoga Teacher Training, and we give them a paper with a sequence and then they just do exactly that. But that's not the type of teacher that I want to cultivate here. I want them to think on their
critical
own.
Critical thinking, right.
Critical thinking. Right. Yes. And learn how to put these things together in a way that's really authentic to who they are.
Yeah.
And it's not going to necessarily be teaching exactly what Laura and Rachel teaches the way they do it. And you and I teach super differently too.
Right. Yeah, I know. And I think also when we convey that in yoga, what I hope and what I've seen is when people go back and they're like, should I really be doing this job that is not in line with the way, you know, the way I want to live my life? Like, I think there, when you start like just being, independent
critical
thinker. Critical thinking. Yeah. Like, am I living the best life that I could live? And
should I be eating this?
Yeah,
this
all of it. All of it. I think it starts by just these simple but really important inquiries on the mat.
We were reading a chapter of, I'm going to do a podcast on books. It'll probably be the next one that I do.
Oh,
and I'm rereading so much right now because we are in YTT. But did you ever read the Eric Schiffman book?
Yes.
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 The practice and spirit of moving into stillness.
Yes.
He has a section in there on why to practice yoga. And it's like very old. I mean, it's old school, and it has like a section on balance and strength and flexibility. And then it all boils down to sensitivity. That's the whole reason why to practice yoga.
Love
is
it.
Because it makes us more sensitive to everything. It like develops this sort of listening of how am I feeling? How should I be moving? And then it's easier to change and to realize what's actually good for me, really good for me, versus acting and living from this place of unconsciousness, where, yeah, like it's great for me to maybe eat a pint of ice cream and drink two bottles of wine and do this and this and that, but is it good for me in my heart and soul?
Right.
And that sensitivity, I think, is what it's all about. But then it requires a different type of listening in everything, right? Even when you have a teacher who says, it has to be this way.
Right.
If it doesn't feel good, take a step back and do some critical thinking. Be sensitive to what it feels like for you, because maybe for them it feels awesome and it will continue to feel awesome for 50 years. Who knows? But for us, it's different.
Yeah. I love that sensitivity idea. And I think that it goes beyond just obviously the structure of the body. But like when we are fine tuning our body, fine tuning our nervous system, fine tuning our thoughts. I mean, you're more receptive and your emotions are there. Like you're not burying them. Like we were talking about today, like crying all the time, like
I cry all the time.
And I'm never ashamed of it. And I want people to like not be afraid when they see somebody cry. Like it's not just that sometimes we're afraid to cry ourselves. Sometimes it's really uncomfortable to see somebody crying.
Because people don't know how to hold space
right.
for that.
You just have to let them, like, you don't know why they're crying, and they might be happy crying, but we should be okay with the expression of emotion.
But we're so quick to put the lid on and don't do that, and that's weird, or that's attracting attention. And we do that, I mean, in every day in the training, when we do sharings, and someone is sharing and the other person silently holds space. And the hardest part, I mean, everybody says this all the time, it's when the person in front of you who's doing a sharing becomes emotional and they're sad and they cry and something big is coming out, to not reach out and grab their shoulder or give them a hug or say, you know what, that happened to me too. Or you know what, here's some advice that I have. Or you know what, you are good. You know, all of that stuff that we're projecting.
Yeah, because totally.
We're projecting.
Like, you're okay, you're okay.
Yeah, you're okay. Stop crying, stop crying, stop crying.
Like, you're okay. You're
right,
okay.
Right, you know, right. And essentially it's just, it's cutting them off and it's us projecting our own stuff onto their experience. So just learning how to hold space for that and realize how uncomfortable we are with emotion.
Yes.
It's like, wait, okay, I feel like I need to shift now. I need to steer the conversation elsewhere. I need to leave this emotional moment because she's crying and I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, it's so increased sensitivity is a beautiful thing.
Beautiful thing.
And it's because it doesn't necessarily mean you're overly sensitive. It just means that you are in touch with everything. And so if somebody does say, hey, I don't like triangle, you're like, cool. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're not offended. Like, because if somebody's offended by me saying that they don't like triangle, that has a lot more to do with them than me.
Right. Right.
I mean, like, I'm not taking away from you.
Right.
I just don't
like
it.
Do what you want.
Do what you feel. But I also want you to think that it might not feel good for others too. Mm-hmm. So
you are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl.
I can't believe I'm more than halfway through leading my yoga teacher training. These long days of facilitating and holding space for the growth of new teachers are my absolute favorite thing. But that means I need my coffee. So throughout the day, you'll see me sipping on Four Sigmatic Mushroom Coffee. If you haven't tried this coffee yet, you are missing out. By mixing their coffee with mushrooms, Four Sigmatic has created a healthy and delicious super drink that's the best way to start your day or to keep you going throughout. On top of that, this mushroom coffee contains powerful antioxidants and immune-boosting properties to keep you happy and healthy for days to come. Four Sigmatic creates their blends with only the highest quality mushrooms and other superfoods, ensuring they're free from pesticides, mycotoxins, and other harmful chemicals. Being less acidic than normal coffee is, there's no need to worry about stomach burns or other common side effects like the jitters. Best of all, it tastes great. Four Sigmatic offers everything from mushroom coffees, elixirs, hot cacaos, and matchas. On long days, I drink mushroom coffee with cordyceps. It's vegan, organic, instant, and paired with one of the most energy-supporting mushrooms on the planet. This coffee is my perfect match. It stimulates the central nervous system and adrenal glands to fully energize me. And the more balanced support of the cordyceps means I'm only drinking half of the amount of caffeine normally found in coffee. It's a win-win. Discover the everyday magic of mushrooms for yourself with this awesome deal for From the Heart listeners only. Right now, when you head to foursigmatic.com/yogagirl, you'll get 15% off of your entire order. That's 15% off of any order placed on Four Sigmatic's website, but you have to use my special URL, foursigmatic.com/yogagirl. That's spelled foursigmatic.com/yogagirl. So beautiful. We have received so many beautiful questions, actually. Then they're so spread out in so many different areas. I actually don't know where to start. We got a bunch of questions about your house. I feel like we're not going to go there just yet. And I was like,
yeah, about my house?
There's people asking about your house. It's so cool.
Okay.
But so, for instance, okay, this was a big one. People are talking about text neck and how it's also prevalent in yoga poses and not so often addressed.
Except I address it all the time.
Because in the last episode we had, you did a whole thing explaining what text neck is and how we can all find better neck alignment right now. And then people are talking about that, but not everybody knows what you mean. And now people are freaking out wondering,
am I
doing something bad to my neck just by holding my phone or by practicing plank?
Well, I will say there are a lot of poses that can reinforce text necking. So
what is, for someone who didn't listen to the last episode, what is text
neck? Yeah, so text necking is that lovely appearance when your head is forward of your shoulders and you're flexing your head. So it basically, your head goes down because it's going forward. Imagine looking at a phone. So it's going forward and down. And then to align your vision, you just kind of lift your chin up. So it's like this kind of like sticking your head out, but it's also down. So it's like slumpy shoulders and then your head's out. So just imagine that.
Jutting out.
It's like jutted out, chin. The back of your neck is kind of closed off, especially right at the base of the skull. And I mean, I'll just sit there on the subway and look around at all of the people that are doing it. And I want to be like, stop what you're doing. Please look up and over. You know what I mean? Like, it's really bad. I'm so horrified
by
it.
We could do a hilarious Instagram video of you in the subway frantically.
Like, PSA, stop everybody. Look at your neighbor. It's good for your neck too, your heart and your soul. Put down your phones or at least hold them in front of you. No, I've had all the girls in this training be like, I've been holding my phone up ever since the last thing. So the thing, getting back, oh no, this is so bad. So, but the thing about yoga that's really crazy is that if you come to a practice and you have that like forward head, there are like in plank, your head can drop down. In cobra, you're kind of like jutting your chin up in cobra. So a lot of times I have people just try and actually find a neutral neck, meaning like pulling their front throat back into their the neck, the spine, the cervical spine, and then just really focus on moving their chest and not doing the jut up to the ceiling because their chin's already jutted forward. So when they jut up to the ceiling, they're really closing off the neck, the back of the neck more. And I know I'm saying a lot of this without picturing it, but essentially, can you get your the head? I called it the other day, like it's a TV going over the, it's going over the third floor building, and there are these ropes that are trying to hold it and bring it back to the windowsill. And that TV is your, that's your head. And so can you just pull it back in space to get it back on the windowsill and then just look out at the view? You don't have to tip it up. So it's...
But what's the worst? The worst part is tipping it forward.
Yes.
And then up.
Yes.
It's not just necessarily keeping it in line and lifting.
No. It's like really, it's that you're up, so many people are already starting forward and then their chin's already slightly up and then they throw their head back. So they're compressing an already compressed area. And what's so interesting is people do it. And then when I kind of instruct them not to do it, they'll be like, oh, that feels better. That never really felt great. And you're like, well, stop doing it. But so many girls that I've been talking to this week, they walk around with kind of chronic neck pain. And it's really scary.
Yeah, I mean, but where is it going to go then in 10 years?
Text neck generation.
Oh yes, but it's terrifying.
It's terrifying. It's so, I don't know.
Once you think about it, I mean, now I have to hold my, hold my phone up in front of my face like a moron.
Yeah.
You look like an idiot.
Right.
I mean, that's your fault.
Yeah.
Altogether.
Yeah,
so we can all recognize each other. If we ever see anyone in the street or at an airport holding their phone, like they're holding like a signpost or something in front of their face, like a crazy person.
Yes.
It's because they've listened to this podcast or practiced with Laura.
That's right. And you're going to be like, hey, you're cool too. All right. Heads up. No lump in the back of our neck. We're good. So many people have written me about that. What is the lump?
The lump that you're referring to. Lump.
Oh my gosh.
But I was thinking about this when we were just this week, the tendency or our tendency to always want to move faster or get to where we're going quicker to kind of live in the future, be there.
Yeah.
And that's sort of that's what the neck is doing. It's like we're, even in plank, we're going to chaturanga and the chin juts out like, I want to get there. I want to get there faster. So we lead with a chin and with a head versus from our actual center.
And it also cues that fight or flight thing, you know, like, huh? Like that, like I got to be ready for something bad. It's coming our way. You know, it's that chin out. And so it really revs up the nervous system in not a great way either. And that, I think all of it, what do people always say when we like kind of recorrect their head like this week? Like, oh my gosh, I feel more blood flow. Like that's pretty important. There's a brain there. It loves oxygen. You know, I was telling one of the girls that, and I kind of did some work on their neck and kind of had it. And I said, you know, like if you keep, like that tightness back there can really lead to migraine headaches. She goes, I have migraine headaches. And I'm like, I'm not a magician. I just know if there's no blood flow there, it's going to hurt your head.
So anyone who's listening who suffers from migraines, let this be the first thing that you do is pick up your phone.
Yes, pick up your phone. Stop looking down.
Stop looking down.
The other thing I
also on computer.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. The other thing I would recommend is a lot of people have their screen still too low and they're looking down at their computer. And so if you can figure out a way, not only to prop it way up, and I know a lot of people have done that, but even to like mount it. I mean, obviously don't do that if you don't have, but if you have
you need an external,
keyboard. Yeah. Like the screen
because otherwise
itself.
You sit like this.
Yeah.
But I mean, if I have to choose, I would rather choose, okay, sit like this. This is a podcast. No one knows what I'm doing. Yeah.
She looks like a little
I'm doing like T-Rex. Like a little T-Rex arm where like imagine that my computer is elevated on a table. Like I normally sit on the floor
and
I put that computer on the coffee table.
Right.
So it's too high for my elbows and for my wrists.
Yes.
But I'd rather do that than drop my head. Yes. Down to look at it at the table because I know my issue is my neck and my upper back. But in an ideal world, I would have one of those super fancy Apple computers with an external keypad thing.
Yeah. And I think if you're working anywhere where you're on, and there's many people who are doing this, where they're on their computer
all the time,
like 8 hours a day, they should invest in having a screen that's separate from their keyboard, because then they're going to knock out the whole elbow issue. And then they can mount it like it's eye level, not below eye level. But it's like they're like you would look at it. You aren't looking down at a TV. I mean, people still look at TVs. I know that they do a lot of stuff on their computer, but the TV is never really like downwards.
Down,
it's like you're if it's down, you're down on a couch looking at it.
Right,
you know
right,
what I mean? Right. We're looking. Or why are they all mounted up? Because that just feels right. So that's where our screen should be.
That's where our screen should be.
You are listening to From the Heart, Conversations with Yoga Girl.
In my opinion, the logo says so much about your company. One single design can tell you so much. And I remember just how hard it was to find the perfect one when I was starting up some of my businesses. That's why I'm so excited to let you know about Design Crowd. Design Crowd is a website that helps entrepreneurs, startups, and small businesses outsource or crowdsource custom logos, business cards, web designs, and more. That means you work with many designers from around the world to compete to win your budget. Super awesome for small businesses that need top international design talent at a low cost. This would have been perfect when I was starting up my business. Founded by two university friends in a home in Sydney, Australia, Design Crowd has grown to a team of 50 staff and 600,000 designers from all around the world. To date, they have completed $30 million worth of projects. That's amazing. And you can try it out today. Design Crowd is ready to help you with all awesome creative ideas. First, just post information describing the design that you need. Within hours, you'll receive your first response. Typically, projects get 60 to 100 submissions from around the world in only 3 to 10 days. Then, pick your favorite design and approve the payment. That is all. You no longer need to take a risk on one designer nailing your brief. And if you don't find anything you like, no worries. Design Crowd has a money-back guarantee. Start any project from just $99. You can crowdsource just about any creative project on Design Crowd, from logos to banner ads, WordPress, Facebook pages, and much more. Some people have even crowdsourced tattoos on Design Crowd. Launch your new logo or rework an existing design. Do it all with Design Crowd. For a special $100 VIP offer for our listeners only, check out designcrowd.com/yogagirl to learn more and to save $100 when you start your next project. That's designcrowd.com/yogagirl, designcrowd.com/yogagirl. Or simply enter the discount code yogagirl when posting a project on Design Crowd. What about someone wrote in saying for someone who sits all day and has a desk job and might spend eight hours sitting down, and then you come home and you're exhausted and you spend another 3 hours sitting on the couch. Do you have some tips for a person who's very sedentary?
Sedentary. It is a tough word
I'm looking for.
Well,
aside from get up and get moving. For the love of God.
You know, it's so hard because we talked about this, I think, on the first podcast.
Yeah.
So it's so ironic, you know, like so crazy is like you can sit for 8 hours and feel exhausted. You've done nothing and you feel exhausted. So I think the key is you have to schedule in some kind of movement. You just have to. Otherwise, you're just going to always fight fatigue because you haven't gotten your blood pumping and your lymphatic system moving. And so for that person, even if it's 5 minutes out of every hour, you get up and you do something, walk the stairs, do jumping jacks, anything to just move and get your blood flowing, because you're actually going to feel more energy by doing that. But those people are really going to have to schedule it. If you're sitting that long, you're going to have to schedule it. I mean, I see so many people who get lost in their work, 3 hours go by and they haven't gotten up at all. So also drink a lot of water so you have to get up and pee.
Yeah, that's a great
right?
thing.
Right? I mean, really, it's you got to, if you don't remember, you should at least be hydrating to make yourself get up. Mm-hmm. And every time you go to the bathroom. The
movement is energizing. I think people forget that.
It is.
Especially after a long day, if you've been sitting, you know, and you're super exhausted, and then the right. thought of doing some sort of movement after that can be really, really hard.
Yeah.
But Dennis, for instance, he gets so energized by moving his body. Like, he becomes like a little energizer bunny. He cannot, will not do physical exercise late at night because he's up till 2 a.m. He cannot go to sleep.
Oh my gosh.
It's so crazy.
That's so crazy. But it also really does reset your kind of natural biorhythm. So people that don't sleep well, the first thing that when somebody says, oh, I don't sleep very well, I'm like, are you exercising at all? Are you getting up and moving? Because movement is also helping you establish those natural rhythms. You know, my daughter, whenever she feels stressed, I mean, I also asked her, like last week, she was upset about something and she said, yeah, I haven't been exercising, Mom. And I talked to her today and she's like, guess what I've been doing every day? Daddy and I've been getting up at 6:15 and running 3 miles. I'm like, yes, my work is done. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what movement. Just move the energy within the body.
Yeah.
And the idea of movement having to be for a specific purpose. Like, mm-hmm. I think people are like, oh, I have to move because I need to be in shape, or I have to move because I want to lose weight, or I have to move because of all these external factors.
Right.
We have to move because it makes us happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
We cannot function if we don't move.
I think actually that to me is even more compelling. Not like doing it for something that doesn't really have, I mean, it has superficial value, but not lasting value. Mm-hmm. Like movement to move because we're supposed to move. Like, we're going to do that every day. Like, it's like if you have a dog and they're just in a doghouse all day, they're just going to be crazy, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where we're really like that at our core essence. We need to move. We just need it.
Speaking of core essence.
I should get like $5 for every time
every
I say
time,
core.
Every time you say core, you should give me $5.
I should, right?
Core. No, we've been joking about this in training. Before you came, every day we would have something come up. And then I said, you know, we're going to talk about this when Lara gets here. We're talking about wrist pain. We're talking about this. I'm like, the answer to most of Lara's questions is going to be more core. Yes. The answer to most of your questions to Lara is going to be more core. Why is core strength such a fundamentally important piece of this entire puzzle?
Well, I'll keep it simple, but because most people immediately think core as like doing sit-ups or something like that. And that's not that it's not that, but it's so much more than that. It's like, just imagine a container, like a soda can or whatever. And that's like our core. And then there's like little stick legs and stick arms that stick out from that. And that is
like a Mr. Potato head.
Yeah, like a Mr. Potato head. Somebody was that, right? Like a big old head too. Big brain and all that. But the core is the center of everything. It is the center of our body. And how we hold ourselves in space, how we move in space, how we feel. Everything that's functioning from the physiological level, I mean, digestion, respiration, elimination, everything is core strength. It's really, really true. And I've had so many girls this week be like, oh my gosh, I feel like this is changing my blah, blah, blah. You know, and it's not like they ever say, oh, I feel like I've got a flatter stomach. It's
no.
They're feeling how it's impacting their joints, how it's impacting their posture, how it's impacting how they feel about themselves.
Yes, that to me is
and
the
their
biggest,
potential.
Biggest
yes.
thing.
It's amazing. Like, it gives me the chills. Because it never is about the look of it. It's
because we
always
live from there.
Yeah. We live from there.
Yeah.
It's where our, like when I was talking today with the girls, it's like those energetic channels of who we are and how we feel in our body and how we feel about our goals in life and our purpose, they all reside in our core. We express it out in our limbs, but they reside and are generated in our core. And it's so... So
what is different? I mean, if you look at kind of the evolution of us as human beings, was there a time where we naturally lived from this place of center in a more organic way versus the way we are now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think from reading some of the evolutionary books, there's definitely more connection to the land. And I think the land, like literally like what we walk on, I think the land is the earth's core, you know? So our connection to the land is like that energy is coming into us. So it automatically kind of fuels our core. And you know, our ancestors were much more active, whether it was like walking long distances to look for places to live or food, living in communities and helping each other. But things were much more physical. I mean, we've gone like completely the other direction and minimized all of our movement systems. We're not on the land. So we're really disconnected from our core. I think it just was so much more natural in every way. We were connected to the core of the earth. We were connected to the core of our community. So every core part was integrated. And now we have to kind of go backwards a little bit and really go back to making it happen, manifesting that core connection, because it's not, there's so many things that are pulling us away from it.
Hmm.
That sounded really good.
No, it sounded real. I'm like a little,
yeah. Yeah, like, right?
But it's so interesting that this is, and it's become this sort of epidemic now of wanting to change our bodies because of the way they look. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea of core work is like, oh, it's super hard. And why would we do that? And unless it's for the reason of having a flat stomach or it's bikini season. So do your sit-ups.
Yeah.
And to me, it just resonates so much of I'm living from this place. So if I'm anchored here and I feel empowered here, it means I'm making decisions from what's true to me.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's a totally different thing.
Totally.
Like I feel anchored in my own body. I feel at home. My feet are on the ground if I'm connected to my core. And for me, this, like having the baby, losing that, like this energetic shift of I'm now living through and because of this baby. Like all importance that I had, you know, within myself was completely lost, which I'm sure is totally normal after having a child.
Yeah.
But finding my way back to that has been this complete and total, like total awakening.
Yeah, and I think in some ways, journeying back to it, fortifies it more. Like, because you're really, everything in your life has shifted in its meaning, truly,
right,
because
right.
you
but
have
that's
this other
supposed
person.
To be that
but it's
way.
It's supposed to be that way, right? And but then journeying back, it's almost the strength is so much greater.
So much greater.
Yeah.
No, it's the most beautiful thing. And then I look at the baby, and I'm like, oh, she's just living in this container, you know, from this complete place of trust. And she's anchored. And I don't know. And I'm almost scared to, because I know there is going to be a point that's completely sort of out of my control where all of a sudden she's going to look at herself, you know, because of society. And that's just what it is. And friends, and she's going to be at school, and someone's going to say something mean, or she's going to see something on TV and social media, all this stuff. Like, she's a woman living in 2018. She's going to grow up and be a woman. Did you ever have a moment like that with your kids or with your daughter where you were like, oh my God, I see the shift from being a child living in this body, using the body for the amazing tool that it is versus now becoming this thing that I judge or.
Yes. No, I do remember that. And I remember it was, I mean, a friend of hers, she was probably 12 or 13, said, and she was at a really, you know, sweet little school. It wasn't like, I mean, there was, it was all about values. It was a Quaker school. And one of her friends said, whether it was intentionally mean or not, like, oh, if you were to have plastic surgery, what would you change about?
What? How old is she?
12. Okay. And I remember she came back and told me this, and I simultaneously wanted to like throttle the girl, which all mamas know that feeling of like, And no, then she went further and said, oh, you might want to change blah, blah, blah about yourself. Like,
oh, God.
And, you know, she had, and that pierced my heart because she had never on her own looked at her body or her face or anything
in that way.
And I just, you know, and as a mom, you're just like, oh, it's a little bit of the varnish, you know, was on.
But you can't control that.
You can't. And
no.
So I have modeled, I think, from the beginning, like, you know, my mom never talked about, and she had triplets. Okay. So she had a big belly that expanded. Like, I mean, and her belly came back, but she never, in all my years of growing up, she never put herself down. She never spoke ill of herself. She never said, oh, I'm fat or I want to go. She never talked about diets. And I look at my friends whose parents did do that. Mm. And even if they have, like, they're gorgeous and thin, that was their experience. And so that becomes what they...
Right.
And so I do
like the normal, like the normal is to not feel okay.
Yes.
About.
So I do think the home life, what we can do is model it as much as possible. So I don't talk about like weight or, you know, you need to put on makeup or anything like that. Nothing like that at all. And so it does help against some of the stuff that they will experience in school, but it's inevitable and it is sad when it happens, but I'm really happy now because she has a very good sense of self. And I think a lot of that probably comes from, you know, our household but also just reassuring her that life is so much more than your appearance, right? It's who you are at your essence, because that is really what remains over the years. You know, your hair can change colors, your hair could fall out. Things can change in
it
your
will
appearance,
change.
And it will change. But who you are, if you are making that stronger and better and kinder, that's what matters.
That's
so
it
helps, right?
Said. Yeah. It does.
And that's what we should teach all the girls.
Yes, and I also
girl
feel
power.
Like girl
yeah.
power,
yeah.
and also little boys, and
oh yeah,
and finding our way back maybe to that inner child, like living.
Yeah.
In that way, where
yes.
we're existing in our bodies, and it's beautiful to just be in this body, no matter what it looks like.
Yeah,
but that's not the point. The point is feeling really great.
Yeah,
but it's sort of yeah, because I always feel like okay, let's like core work. We're gonna work our core,
right.
and immediately the mind goes to oh, because I have to look a certain way.
Right.
But it has really very, very, very little or nothing to do with that at all.
No, when I do core work, it's I love the experience of the challenge of something being hard, but what I really love is that awakening. Like, whoa, that's really, I mean, I feel like, and I know I see it when people do core work and it's like, oh my God, there's all of a sudden they're sweating. And it's like, oh, because you're lighting your fire. Like it's literally your fire that you're lighting. And yes, that's coming out in the form of sweat, but it's not just like sweat for the purpose of burning calories or something. It's like so it bigger purpose in life,
mm-hmm,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. On the opposite end of that, I had someone wrote in a really good question that I wanted to just read exactly the way she wrote it because it was so good, and I just had a little realization about myself in this topic. She writes, tips. Could you guys give some tips and ideas for allowing your body to truly relax and really rest? I practice yoga and I meditate, but I don't feel like I'm ever fully letting go and allowing for rest for long enough periods of time. It feels unsafe to allow myself to rest and relax. How do you learn to trust letting your body completely rest?
Wow, because I don't have that problem at all.
No, I have this problem. Oh my God, totally hot.
See, I am a, I'm not, I don't want to say I'm a closet couch potato, but I, but I'm on the, like, I feel like I'm really like in Newton's law. Things at rest like to stay at rest and things in motion like to stay in motion. I feel like I have that. Like I'm that so for me, I don't really have that. I feel like, you do.
How do you rest and regenerate? Because you spend so much time moving.
Yes.
You have a really intense job. You travel a lot. You have kids and a studio. And
I find things that I like to do that are sedentary. So I really do enjoy reading. I like reading. So I will get on the couch and read. And it's not always like it doesn't have to be, nonfiction or fiction. It's anything, like just something that's just relaxing and calm. And I just like that. And I have my dogs get on the couch with me. And I get on the dogs. They get on me. I get on the couch with my dogs every day. And that's my form of rest. Like I'm like sitting there and I'm usually either writing or reading, sipping my coffee. I mean, I have these little kind of pockets in my day of tradition, so to speak, or practice where I am. And I love it. I don't have to be like, okay, time to be still. I'm like, okay, I just always say to the dogs, okay, time to snuggle. I take my coffee over there and we just like sit. And that's to me really restful because the purpose is nothing more than to just be with them.
Hmm.
And
so it's not this idea of, oh my God, I have to relax now.
I think that's probably a hard thing to do, to tell yourself to relax. I can say things I know I don't do. Like, I don't do well, like, lying on a beach and just lying there. Like, right? I'm just, that's not me. I could do it for a little bit, but then I'm like, wow, it's hot. You know,
just like a little side
that's
note.
Not relaxing.
Laura and her entire family, two kids and her husband, walked across the entire United Kingdom.
United Kingdom. I thought you were saying United States.
United Kingdom.
I almost
for
you go
summer
there.
Vacation. Yeah. Last yeah. year or yeah, two yeah. years ago. When was it? 2 years
We've
ago.
We've done it twice.
You've done it twice.
Well, we did
Who
it.
Does that?
We did it in England and then we did it in Scotland. But
also biked across country.
Yes.
With a tent.
Right. Yeah,
took three months. So you are a certain
no, I'm
type
definitely,
of person.
I'm not going to lie on a beach for 10 days. That's just not me, and that's not my husband. I mean, if we, but I just think for that person who feels like it's hard for her to rest, I would be like, what makes you feel good? Some people love getting in the bath, and that's, you could be resting there. Don't have an idea of what your rest needs to be like, as long as it's bringing you a sense of calmness and joy. And it could be 5 minutes. It doesn't also have to be like 5 hours. But I do think you got to find something that gives you pleasure, right?
But what if you are living in this constant place of like this fight or flight, for instance? What if your body is kind of, you've been through trauma, or you have this movement pattern or standing pattern of telling your body that we always have to be prepared because next shoe is going to drop at any moment. Do you have any tips to kind of how to drop into that parasympathetic place of actual rest? My astrologer told me this. I think about this all the time because I got my bathtub and I always have a hard time completely. Like, I can relax. Like, I'm good at like watching a movie with Dennis and drinking a glass of wine. Like, I'm good at carving out those moments for sure. But sometimes I'm in that moment, but my brain is like completely wired. And Deborah told me, she says, are you relaxing? Like, are you meditating? I'm like, yeah. Like, I'm in the bath every day. She's like, well, you can be in the bath and run through your to-do list, and it's the same as if you're at work. You're just wet.
Love it.
I love it so much. I'm like, oh my God, it's so true. It's like, if my mind is firing the same way, it doesn't matter if I'm lying on a beach or on the couch or in the tub or at work or whatever. It's the same sort of internal stress.
Yes.
So how can we, do you have any tips for how to put that down?
Yeah.
Maybe tell the body to.
Yeah, I think that you have to, for something like that, if you are indeed moving, because sometimes people like that are kind of moving around, but they're not actually moving with intention. Like, even if it's like do a 10-minute jog or something. So if that person is like always going and exercising and still having, I think there's so many great tools out there, really in the form of apps. Like, I know, for instance, with my son, we found this random app called Sleep Like a Baby. Okay. because he would want me to like lie next to him before he'd go to bed. And I would tell him a story and all that. But then he found it. He's like, oh, let's listen to that. And it was this guy, and he'd go, and now you're lying in your bed. And it was this, like, it was crazy, but everybody look that up. It's like a free app, Sleep Like a Baby. And that's how he talked. And I'm like, who is this guy? But after a while, like after the maybe fourth time, every time he said that, I felt my body just go, whoosh, like drop in. And that's
like
exactly
hypnosis.
This guy, the way he talked, and that's what, when I read about it later, because I'm like, why is this working so well? It's like your brain knows when he goes, and now you're lying in a bed and you're feeling,
it's like Pavlov.
It's Pavlovian.
Pavlovian.
Yes.
The dogs.
Minute, I mean, after the fourth time. And so we've done that probably, I don't know, 30 times. And sometimes during the day, like if I have like all this kind of stuff going on in my head and I nothing's getting done because, you know, it's so busy, I'll go up in my room and I'll put that app on. I'm like, and now lying. And I don't necessarily go to sleep, but it's all, everything in my body just
drops.
So the point is, find something. And there are really good apps. And I think hypnosis is something that has like a hypnotic effect. Is great because it will train your brain when you can't do it. Like, you can't sit there and go, okay, now I got to relax. Now you just have, you need some cue that sends that or to your some brain. Act, yeah, something. Yeah.
A trigger. For calm.
Right. That mm-hmm. just like, boom. Because I couldn't believe it. I'm like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. And it's free.
I love it.
It was so cool. Much. Yeah. And the guy's voice is like,
I'm blanking on it now, but we just watched a movie. Or was it a show where it was this sort of hipster thing where every Wednesday, oh no, wait, it was a book I read. Oh my God. So there was a thing in this book that I read where every Wednesday there was like a Slovakian or guy who right. had who told a story. It was like a bedtime story for adults. Where everybody gathered and they had blankets and they sold wine and then you curled up and he was this big burly man and he read everybody a bedtime story before bed. I'm like, we should do this at the studio. Why aren't we?
Yes.
Like a late night thing.
They have an app for that too. It's like a guy reading.
There's an app for everything.
Well, and I know Mark, because then Mark found that out because my husband's like one of these he's really wired. Like he's a really good example because he's wired. People think I'm energized. I am like a sloth compared to my husband. So it's very relative because people are like, you have so much energy. I'm like, wait a second. You've clearly not met my husband. So he doesn't need coffee in the morning. How is that possible? He gets up like after 4.5-5 hours of sleep.
Every night.
Pops out of bed.
He never has to like have a night where he catches up and he has more.
Occasionally. Like he'll be like, I'm really tired. And then he might sleep 7 hours. But he's just, there are people that are out there. I've realized there are people that are genuinely like that.
I mean, I can be like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not forever.
Yeah.
But
I can be like that. But 5 hours, not usually. Like I can be like, anyway. So he was having like, he's like, I need some sleep. And so he looked up something and it was like, a guy reading a bedtime story, but it was super boring the way he would read it. And it was the same thing. It's like hypnotic because he's so boring. And the little girl went, and I listened to it one time with him and it's so fun. So look it up. It's another app. It's like,
you know what Jess does? Jess at the studio. She's one of our teachers at the studio. So she has to sleep with something. She said either music or a TV. Like she has to have some sort of static background noise, like, or she cannot sleep. So she said she always listens to, and it's like the 2012 statistical report of the Swedish government spending budget. I don't know. It's
like a financial
report. It's the most boring thing ever. And she said, but then you started the podcast, and I was like, oh my God, great! I can like fall asleep with something positive. And she's like, but then her mind would attach because she got interested, so it didn't work. So she has like the ex prime minister of Sweden reading weird ass statement.
The expenditures yes. this year were on. Yeah,
and that's how she sleeps. I know. So I'm like, this is genius. Yeah. No, but it's very true. So finding. Well, first of all, movement is a big component. If you mm-hmm. don't move all day, it's going to be really hard to drop into a place of real rest because you're going to have a lot of stagnant energy and a lot of stuff in the way.
Think of Leiluna. Like she's moving during the day and then it's like, boom, she just drops right into her crib. I mean, that's how we're just big toddlers.
Yeah, essentially.
we just have different types of tantrums, but I mean, we need movement too.
We need movement.
We really
too.
Do. Yeah. Yeah.
And then finding that one trigger that helps relax. Mm-hmm. I mean, and a tip that I would give, a yoga nidra is so...
Oh, that's so good. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Finding a studio that has a...
Well,
they have apps for that.
They have apps. They have all that.
We need to gather all these apps in one place.
I know.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So because so many people talked about this and I was in shock because we don't talk about this.
Okay.
So people were like, Laura, tell us about your sustainable home. Laura, tell us about your eco house. Laura, I'm like, what?
What? I know these things that you forget. It's like when I'm a triplet and I say, oh, you know, my triplet brothers. I'm like, what? It's just like, I forget. Okay. So we designed and built an eco home 9 years ago, and it was still relatively kind of a new thing. So it took about a year to design and a year to build. And so, I mean, from nuts to bolts, everything pretty much, I would say 98% of everything in there is either like FSC certified, which means, what does that mean? Forest certification, which means they're like fallen trees. And so instead of like just taking them and doing mm-hmm. something with them, they take them and refurbish them for wood for a house or the floors. We have recycled countertops in all of our bathroom and kitchen. I mean, it's a solar passive solar design. So the way it's architected is to maximize the use of the sun at all, in all seasons. And even the way the angle of the sun coming in, it's crazy. The amount of, it's all actually a very, so my husband's really good about talking about it, but.
You never talk about this.
I know.
No, I mean, I know you guys live a super sustainable life, but I mean, because I mean, it wasn't like yesterday you built this house.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like passive solar design, solar panels. We have a solar hot water heater. We have geothermal, which is when you're using the natural core temperature. Oh, there it is again. The core temperature. Core.
Put a dollar in the jar.
Yes, exactly. $5.
The core jar. $5 in the core jar.
The natural core temperature of the earth, so that the air conditioning and heating is all coming from that. What else? I mean, we have like the insulation is.
But do you talk about this in social media? Is that why people are asking these questions?
I took a picture of my house and I'm like, it was Earth Day. It was an Earth Day post. And I got actually so many comments about it. And they're like, please talk about it. Please have
it. Wait, you took a picture of the outside of your house?
The outside the house. And I'm like, oh.
You're not worried that some strange person is going to come into your house?
Your
social media following is growing.
Yeah, no, I know. Please nobody come to my house and fuck this up for me. Really,
please,
I'm too very.
Leave me alone. Send me a direct message.
Two dogs.
Don't knock on my door.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They'll bite you all over. Yeah. So yeah. No. Anyway, it's really fun because the house is so well designed and well built and efficient. Like, talk about efficiency. Oh my God, the core. I'm gonna bring it up. Yeah. Like, there's no leaks. There's no leaks. There's no leaks of energy. It's super efficient. So it's awesome. I mean, I will tell you, it's more expensive to build, but you build a smaller house because that's the other thing. I don't have a formal dining room because if I have people over, I just pull in a bunch of different tables from different areas, and there's no wasted space. It's also very feng shui. You know, it's like no wasted space. Like, I'm not going to have a room that I don't use, and it's just sitting there because that's dead energy. So,
oh my God, we have a dead energy room for sure.
Well, you might have storage in the room. It's a closet though, right?
It's a closet. Yeah. But it's like,
there's a lot of stuff in that closet.
I'm never in there.
Right.
I really don't.
Well, no, a closet
is
different.
In our bedroom.
Yeah.
Because we have in our bedroom, I have like a little, like a little drawer thing. Mm-hmm. And that's basically like all the stuff that I wear. And then I have like, we have a room that is a closet type thing.
Yeah.
That has all my dresses and all my things. I'm never in there. Yeah. And it's to me like a dead energy.
Right. When you walk
room.
In.
Yeah. When I walk in, I'm like, I don't want to spend any time in here.
Yeah.
Like,
you design your own house. See, that's what the benefit is.
Or I need to find use for it somehow.
Yes, exactly. Well,
if we ever have another baby, I mean, then it will make
sense. Yes, because that'll be like, there'll be catty corner. That'd be cute.
Yeah, that'd be cute.
So anyway, yeah, there's lots of fun stuff. I have a lot of people at my house. So if you're normal and nice,
if you're interested
in talking about the core.
Don't be a psychopath. Oh my God. I would like
Princeton, New Jersey.
Princeton, New Jersey. Someone get a core jar for Laura.
I know. Exactly.
Her studio.
Yes.
Well, people can also visit you at your studio.
Yes, in Princeton, New Jersey, Yoga Stream Studio. It's fun. It's also eco-friendly, by the way.
Also eco-friendly.
Yes. P.S. Yes. So it's like no VOC paint. There's the wood is all FSC certified.
Oh, but yoga is also, I mean, we built it. Mm-hmm. We couldn't afford the solar panels.
Yeah.
I mean, we were like scraping the bottom of every barrel like 15 times. But we have it installed in a way that when we afford the solar panels, we can just install them. Like, it's
already prepped.
And then the hot water, there's like something eco about it. We don't have it yet, but when we have it.
But you have the type of toilets I have, the dual flush, so you're not like, that was really new. When we, like 9 years ago, that was like, what are these two? People are like, what are these two buttons? And I'm like, this is when you go to the pee and this is when you know.
Oh, the dual. No, that's not what I meant.
Oh, but
that's
every
European toilet.
Yeah. Well, not every American toilet. Yeah,
every
you guys
European
are ahead
toilet
of us.
Has
yes.
like the pee and the poop buttons.
Yeah, I know. We felt very Euro.
A very Euro. I love it. No, but we have some sort of like water minimizing toilet. So it's not supposed to be
Oh, I know. Low
water.
Flush. Low flush.
Okay, that's
because we have low flush and we also have low pressure on in our showers, which some people find less satisfying. But suck it up,
suck it
right?
Up,
like, there's water shortage around the world. You can, yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, thank you for coming on the show again.
We only covered like, I don't know, a minute, mini part of all the people sending so many amazing questions.
So great.
Did you ever consider starting a podcast of your own?
I'd really like to do one for movement because it actually talking for efficiency. I'd be so much better off talking about this stuff than I get so many great questions and direct messages.
Do you
messages.
Listen to any podcasts?
Besides yours, of course. But no, I do listen to some PT ones. So I'd like to do a movement podcast. So if you're interested in having me do a movement podcast, say I.
Say I. Say I.
Now. Stay tuned for Podcasts with Movement.
Podcasts with Movement coming soon.
Coming soon.
I love you so much.
Thank you, Rachel. If you ever want
to build an eco home in Aruba so we can hang out all the time and not just like five times
a
year. We still see each other a lot.
I know. It is great. I see you more than I see some people in my family. Which is great. I love it. I might just do that. I might just build a house here.
Let's do it. Boom. Okay. Love you long time. See you next time. If we're going to beat Dennis, you have to come on like at least 3 or 4 more times.
Okay. So. Watch out, Dennis. I'm on you.
All right, everyone. Have a good day. See you next week. A big thank you to my guest, Lara Hyman, for once again coming on the show. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to listen and subscribe to other great episodes of From the Heart Conversations with Yoga Girl. You can find all of them on rachelbraithen.com, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or anywhere you normally get your podcasts. Don't forget to leave a review while you are there. Thanks to the folks at Cadence 13 for their production work, and of course, thanks to my sponsors, TransferWise, Parachute, Four Sigmatic, and Design Crowd. Please support them the way they support this podcast. I'll see you next week.